Hello, this is Gabriel Morton, your professional The Simpsons understander, and this is my audio talkie for The Crepes of Wrath. My recollection. Bart goes to France. The cherry bomb in the toilet always interested me because fireworks were outlawed in Australia, so the idea that a kid could get a hold of explosives was amazing. I would later download the Jolly Roger handbook and make a few of the more basic things that explode, along with one remarkably effective smoke bomb. I stopped mucking about with it both for fear of injury and because I had a selection of dirtbag friends who were more than happy to do it all themselves. Nobody ever got seriously injured, though one time Shane tested his homemade mace on Kyle by saying, "Hey Kyle," and spraying him in the face with his homemade mace. It was mostly isocal, Tabasco, and salt. I don't know what the real ingredients of mace are, but Kyle screamed and swung blind for a while, so this was a fairly effective approximation. It also completely gummed up the water pistol it was in, so one screaming, blind Kyle was all it was good for. Not great for self-defense purposes, but I laughed for 15 minutes, so at least some good came of it. The episode. The thing about Season 1 is nobody quotes Season 1. It's not that the episodes aren't ever funny, but the forms of humor that more naturally arise from within the family narrative don't lend themselves to focal lines. Most of Season 1 has supplemented the lack of great comedy with the kinds of character episodes a show 5 seasons in can't. The Crepes of Wrath is a bit of an oddity in that it's a novelty episode that exists before the show could really commit to the premise or at least fill with good lines. It's not technically the first of the international stories. That goes to Bart vs. Australia, because it's only Bart visiting France. This split in the family means the action that takes place in France is limited to a few brief scenes that are more about torturing Bart than they are about reveling in the writer's grasp of international stereotypes. This was probably for the better, given that a combination of the Season 1 writing stuff and French jokes would probably be embarrassingly hokey. So the episode is fairly weak, limited by the narrative and its ability to really explore the character and by its historical position in exploiting more memorable absurdist humor. Bart arrives home from school to greet a pet frog that has never been referenced again. I get the feeling it's some long-shot French joke, but its distance from that part of the narrative and later irrelevance suggests otherwise. It may have been an idea for Bart to either have a long-term pet, or a series of them, that was abandoned, so now there's a weird amount of tension to having a pet froggy that sits in this episode like a Chekhov's replica. Bart's strewn detritus winds up sending Homer down the stairs, where he lays listening to a crusty doll repeat, "I'd like to play with you until the batteries die." It's the best joke of the episode, and Homer's simple, squinting reply of, "The boy, bring me the boy," when Marge and Lisa get home still makes me chuckle. Adding to this is that Bart is upstairs the whole time. An oversight on the writer's part, but it has a way of adding to Homer's suffering as he's either too injured or too stupid to call for help, that or Bart didn't reply when he did. When a real child misbehaves, it's typically spared the level of judgment reserved for adults, as there is less expectation of complete agency. Instead, behavioral management with the goal of correction becomes the focus. This always starts with environmental factors because, even at their most socially entrenched, these are easier to find and address than the dreaded alternative, nature. Bart has legitimate frustrations, injustices, and abuses that one would expect to see in a misbehaving child, the worst being the prison of his own identity. The self is something people defend, even to one's own self-detriment, as a terrible but known self is less existentially terrifying than an unknown or changing self. The attributes about Bart that surround him make even the thought of change the impossible ceding of vital land in an eternal war. But Homer and Marge are neither bad nor inattentive parents. Lisa and Maggie are fair evidence of that, and later episodes confirm the dreaded alternative. Bart's behavior and personality are born out of comic necessity, rather than an understandable result of his upbringing, and this puts an irreconcilable tension at the heart of it. Bart's behavior is destructive, to himself and everyone around him, but sitcom fate makes growth or realization impossible. Sympathy will never last in the face of constantly avoided, and very much deserved, meaningful consequences, so the show does the only thing it can. Hurt him. Bart cannot be fixed, so he needs to be made to suffer. Even if it's just to balance scales visible only to the omniscient audience, the child must experience real pain. Bart suffers in this episode, and it is beautiful. Bart is every child that screams at the injustice of first world luxury, not because of an explanation that veers frustratingly into exploitable excuse, but because fuckwitted cunt is written into his DNA. His torture in France is every time you've wanted to smash some perspective into a brat's face. It's the justice of injustice. A piece of shit can make itself the focus of any teacher's class time to the noticeable detriment of the ones trying to learn. To someone like Principal Skinner, Bart is a sinkhole people keep paying to cover even as it devours more and more of the town. Skinner's hate for Bart is completely counterproductive, but completely understandable. The 3 months without Bart will have been the easiest of his working life. This is also his most successful revenge. Typically, Bart serves as the roadrunner to Skinner's wily coyote, which is funnier when it's a mute bird who may not really deserve it. Bart blows up a toilet and injures Skinner's mother, so he has all of this coming. Speaking of Skinner's mother, Agnes is first seen here, and she is wildly out of character, but considering the things that have been done to Skinner's canon, this is trivial and easily ignored. So Bart is mailed to France for 3 months, while the family receives an Albanian called Adil Hoxha. Albania is kind of an odd duck. It stumbled into its own kind of Stalinist communism after World War II under Enver Hoxha, whom either Adil is named for deliberately or because it's the only Albanian last name any of the writers researched, without any actual input from the USSR at all. The hostility it maintained toward the US was the result of indirect American political interference in Albania in the late 40s, rather than as a part of Cold War allegiances. It wandered between Yugoslavian and Soviet influence over the years, and, funnily enough, had its democratic revolution 2 weeks after this episode aired. I think it's a bit of an odd choice of nation to supply a nefarious spy, but they had to give Adil some kind of great fault to make Homer's preferring him over his own son a more visible moral failing. Adil dupes Homer into taking him about the plant and taking photos of it for his sinister Albanian masters. There's a sense that Homer is supposed to be an idiot here, but when the intelligent alternative is a suburban dad suspecting a foreign child of being a spy, a plot that would be a message about prejudice in most other shows, the whole thing collapses. The reality of Bart is something Homer notices while Adil is in the house. Without the misfiring cylinder that is his own son, the house is one of their stereotypical familial bliss. Adil's spy status is an absurd and desperate punishment for this, and serves only to highlight just how right Homer is. Bart, meanwhile, is treated worse than a mule by his French consequences, César and Ugolin, a story that culminates in Bart's realization that he's the problem while on a trip to buy antifreeze. There's a catharsis to this, both for the viewer and Bart, and his acceptance gives way to the sudden manifestation of the French language skills that saves him. It plays out a bit like sudden rain on Dune, but it's necessary given the constraints of a 23-minute show. Pursuant to my point about character immobility, Bart's realization changes nothing. By the next episode, comic fate has reset him back to what he was before, and this is why he was made to suffer, and will be made to suffer again. Conversely, Homer doesn't change his mind at all. Even after being arrested as a spy, Homer is sadder to see Adil go than he is happy to see Bart arrive. There's scarcely even an attempt at having Homer undergo some kind of realization that he actually loves his eternal burden of a child. It's an odd counterpoint to leave in the show, but better than the typical use of unconditional love to give behavior that is certain to be repeated. The anti-hero or heel who grows in popularity enters risky territory. An underdog can escape consequences in manners that would be wildly unfair for a champion. An environment of zero growth means smaller consequences and character moments can't add up, so the show has to create character balance with blow-off episodes where their new god is tormented. Nothing changes in the narrative, but the viewer's scales get reset or tipped away and the process can begin again without fear of overload. The Crepes of Wrath serves as enough torment to make Bart's bullshit palatable to the audience. It serves this function well, but lacks much else to distinguish it. It's a novelty episode that misses out on the novelty, and a character episode with only half a cathartic epiphany. All we really have is the joy of watching a 10-year-old boy suffer. Yours in needing civil defense plans, Gabriel. Jokes, lines, and stray thoughts. Homer falling down the stairs is funny and a testament to Dan Castellaneta's voice acting. There's a high pitch to Homer's shrieks of pain that help them straddle a difficult line of believable but humorously exaggerated. Agnes Skinner is just a lovely old lady here, both because she needed to be to add to Bart's crime and because they were yet to turn Skinner into a Norman Bates without the courage to do anything about it. The DVD commentary mentions that this was probably the event that changed her, though this is more a throwaway joke than a real explanation. I can't even bother really to address it outside of this, as it's irrelevant given what happens to Skinner's backstory later on. Bart drives through several paintings of the French landscape by Monet, Van Gogh, Picasso, and Manet, running a nice mix of Impressionist, Post-Impressionist, and Post-Post-Impressionist slash Cubist art styles. Apparently César shows up in an episode from season 27, but I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Homer really doesn't end the episode with any kind of revelation that he should love his child, and I find that really funny. The end. Super Future Retrospective. This is a good episode to sort of introduce the idea of irreconcilable balances, particularly as they relate to things like the structure of narrative. You know, if you imagine sort of standing on a balance beam, that's an irreconcilable tension, because you're never sort of float. You can't just lean left or lean right. You're constantly having to work at maintaining a stable position that orbits between these two poles. And fundamentally, all narratives have these. And one of the core ones to something like a sitcom is balancing character and comedy, because the finite resource that they're dealing with is time. And so that's kind of what happens with Bart and why The Simpsons and a lot of other shows, and you'll probably be able to think of them. I mean, they did it to Cartman in the Awesome O episode where, you know, basically he'd been just sort of evolving into, you know, a kind of demigod that could get away with whatever the hell he wanted for ages because it was more or less funny to watch him do so. But, you know, of course he's a piece of shit, and so in order to balance the scales and make it so it's not just, you know, degenerating into the obnoxious Cartman show, you know, they have like an episode or at least a season or so where just bad things happen to him, and then that becomes fun. You know, you can really enjoy watching terrible things happen to Cartman. Similarly, you can enjoy watching terrible things happen to Bart. Shows like South Park can probably exhibit a bit more growth, particularly these days, but shows like The Simpsons, because it's animated and because it comes from a quite early sitcom tradition, well, not really early, probably these days what you'd call middle sitcom tradition. Bart can't grow. You know, this will show up in some later episodes a lot more noticeably and a lot less pleasantly in Bart versus Thanksgiving, where the entire sort of emotional arc and narrative arc of the episode relies on Bart learning a lesson and changing. Then, of course, we're back the next episode, and he hasn't changed one iota. And there's a real time limit on how much you can get away with that crap, because after a while it's just annoying. And generally, that thing where Bart can't grow becomes an obstruction that you have to ride around. You can't balance your episode on Bart learns his lesson, because after a while, even in a non-serialized show, you know, the audience is serialized. They remember what happened last week. So eventually, the fact that they just keep getting away with it with these, you know, fake fucking apologies will build up and the character becomes annoying. And that's why, you know, when you can't sort of fix one, you have the blow-off episodes where, to the audience, you know, Bart might not grow. You know, the family may sort of vaguely act like he does or sort of reset along with Bart. But the audience gets to just at least see him suffer and get punished for the stupid bullshit that he does. And that's sort of this episode. You know, I think in a lot of ways we're all sort of Skinner here. You know, we get to see Bart just get tortured. And we don't feel bad for Bart because fuck him, he deserves it. In a more meta sense, I think this is probably one of the start of some of the better writing. It's still fucking glitches and errors all throughout. I think I can use a inverted commas as a fucking apostrophe at one point. Yeah, you can see the development of, you know, the sort of anecdote kind of creeping in. It was probably the first one where it's sort of really, you know, almost becoming a thing. And I think ultimately that was better because it allowed me to sort of drive a little more into the analytical side. I think analytical elements a little bit longer and a little better as a result. So that's good. We're sort of stepping up into the better work territory. Speaking of better work, I will continue to do it if you continue paying me. Goodbye.